From the Carter Subaru Studios, this is Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Welcome back to Cairo Nights. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. It is the 9 o'clock hour. It's 9:06. Do me a favor. We're going to have a, we have a great hour this hour. We have a lot of stuff we're going to get to. It's a lot of fun, a lot of great stuff, a lot of great audio we're going to play, actually. It's us in this segment in just a few minutes. We're going to play some really great audio, some Gen Z stuff just to annoy you. There's a new Gen Z thing that I'm just not understanding, which is like, why are they making things easier for people? When I mean, life is not going to make things easier, so why are people making things easier for them? We'll get into all that in just a second. But first, I have a simple request for you. Do me a favor. Go download the podcast, Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim. You can get it wherever podcasts are sold. You can get it on Apple, Spotify, wherever. We just love that you have the access to it. And then, if you don't have a chance to listen to the show, which I hope you do, but if you don't have a chance to listen every single hour, every second of every minute of every hour of the show, then you'll at least have it in a podcast form, which is HD, super great, high def, sounds wonderful. It's just like me right there. Anytime you're ready, I'm right there for you. Your best friend in the world. So get it and download it and listen to it. And then also, if you ever get your hands on some of your friends' phones, download it on their friends, on their phones as well. Even if they're not going to listen to it, we still want the downloads. All right, I want to get to some stuff here really fast, and then we'll get into some Gen Z audio that's going to annoy you, but you can also laugh at. This story was kind of crazy. We told you about this yesterday. We're going to talk to this guy in a few minutes, and I think his story is really important because it highlights a problem that we are seeing here in big cities. I'm broadcasting from Seattle, and I don't live in Seattle, though. I chose to move out of the city when I had my family. That's not something that everybody chooses to do, but, you know, there were a number of reasons. Number one, first and foremost, probably financially. You know, we had dreams of, owning a home someday when we first had kids, and that just wasn't going to happen in Seattle. Seattle's very expensive. So we decided to move out of town, and, you know, we were able to buy a house out of town, and we love it now. We live up in Snohomish County. Absolutely adore it. I highly recommend it for anybody. There's so many great neighborhoods south of Seattle and so many great neighborhoods north. And I know there's a few good neighborhoods, even in the city itself. But it's really, really expensive, number one. Number two, it's not very safe. We come across stories all the time that we don't even play on the show because I like to highlight like positivity and upbeat things. And I want you guys to not feel depressed every night when you like end your day listening to me. So I like to highlight good things, happy things. This story is not good or happy. It's annoying. It's a really annoying story, actually. This story just grinds your gears. Listen to this. There was a gas station in Shoreline. And on April 5th, which was Friday morning of last week, the owner of that gas station, a nice fellow that we're not going to name because he doesn't want to be identified, he wakes up early in the morning. It's about 5 a.m. He gets an alert on his phone that his store is being broken into. He owns a Shell gas station in Shoreline. He gets a notification, like any of us might, on our porch cams, that somebody's either at your door, or in this case, breaking into his front door on his at the gas station there. So he flips on his phone, he starts looking at the video, and he could see, yeah, there's a guy breaking into my front door. He hangs up his phone and immediately calls 911. He wants to get police there as fast as possible so they can catch these guys. This is not the first time his shop has been broken into, and he doesn't want to have, he doesn't want to have it happen again. And so he's calling the cops. His wife comes over. She's watching the video. They're detailing everything to the cops. The amazing thing about this, the amazing part of this, is that it takes them like 5 minutes or something to get into the front door. It's crazy. And they come prepared, these burglars. Number one, they have a U-Haul truck so that they can block the view of the entrance. So somebody driving by on the road in Shoreline won't be able to see that somebody's trying to break into the shop. So that sounds pre-planned to me. Number two, the guy who jumps out of the passenger seat door to actually do the breaking in, he has what looks like a construction company grade saw in his hand. And it's battery powered so that he can just immediately start cutting on that lock. Takes him like 3 or 4 minutes. I don't know how successful he is at it. Doesn't seem like it's going super great. So then he brings option number two, which is like a 5 or 6 foot long steel giant wrench. I don't know, not a wrench. What is it? A crowbar. I'm sorry. It's a giant crowbar. Brings this giant crowbar and he starts cranking on that door, trying to get it open, trying to pry it open. Now that doesn't even work. So because these guys are super prepared. Option number three, they have a set of chains, he and the other guy in the truck. I assume it's a guy. I don't know yet if it's a guy. But the other person in the truck who's behind the in the driver's seat, they have a set of chains, which this guy ties to the front door. They tie the other end around the bumper of the U-Haul, and they literally rip the doors open, tearing the front door wide open. And again, the Shell station owner is watching this happen to his shop live on camera as he's sitting there in his house, having been awakened from slumber to this horrible situation playing out at his shop. He's on the phone with 911. His wife is watching. They're detailing everything that's happening. So then the police are now en route. He's talking to 911 operator. He's telling them everything. He's saying, please get the police there. I do not want these guys to get away because they're going to do it again to somebody else, if not me. So then the police get there. And guess what happens? You can see in the videos, you can see the lights reflecting, and I'm going to put these up on, you can check these out if you want to on the Facebook page. I'll put these up on the Facebook page. We have the videos. My buddy David Rose over at Q13, he sent them to me. He also hooked me up with this guy, the shop owner. He said, you got to talk to this guy. He's got an amazing story. People need to hear the story. So thank you to David Rose for sending us that. I'm going to put these videos up. You can watch them. It's crazy how long it takes them to break into the shop. And then it's crazy how brazen they are about being in the shop and taking things. And then they get back in their truck, and I think they know that as long as they get back in their truck before the police get there, that they don't have to worry about it because the police are not going to pursue them because of laws which we have in our state, which is exactly what happens. That's the most frustrating part. As you're watching this happen, you're watching this gas station just be completely vandalized by these guys. Doors ripped open, thousands of dollars worth of damage. And then the police arrived, and you see the police lights. You know the cops are nearby, even though they're not on the camera, because you can see the police lights reflecting off of the side of the building, reflecting off of the gas pumps, reflecting off of the U-Haul truck. They jump back in the U-Haul truck and drive away. And then the cops walk up to the front of the place, not pursuing. I'm going to talk to this guy in a few minutes. It's very frustrating, but here's a little clip of him. He talked to Q13, and he says, he's lived in Shoreline for a long time. This does not make him feel safe. He has a wife and daughters. He does not feel safe anymore.
To me, police is not doing their own job. You know, I was really, really frustrated that time, and I told the police officer, I mean, you guys need to step up. Otherwise, we feel very unsafe. My employees feel unsafe. We live in Shoreline for 35 years, city of Shoreline. We have never seen these kind of problems, what we're seeing for last year or over a year. My wife feel unsafe. We don't let our kids come outside because we feel unsafe.
That sucks. Isn't that horrible? 30 years in a town, you're running a business, you're trying to be good, upstanding citizens, you're doing everything right, and then the criminals just get to run the place. How frustrating that must be. If you own a business like this, I cannot imagine that the margins on a gas station are incredible, that you can just take these losses. And he says insurance doesn't cover everything. He's going to lose about $5,000 on this break-in that he's going to have to cover out of his pocket. He said last time somebody broke in, total damage was about $30,000 out of pocket for him after everything. $30,000 out of pocket. Why aren't the police stopping these people? In this case, they literally were right there. They watched the truck drive away. You can see it. You can see on the video, the truck drives away. 2 seconds later, there's a cop walking up. So why don't they chase them? We're going to find out. We're going to talk to this guy next. So you're going to want to hear that interview and stick around for that. All right, let's get into some other stuff really fast. Let's talk some politics. You guys want to talk a little bit about politics? There's a really interesting thing going on in politics, and that is the question of a presidential debate. Will it happen? Won't it happen? I don't know. All right, so Deadline has this really interesting story. Normally, they report on like Hollywood news, stuff like that. But in this case, they have got their hands on a letter that was sent to both campaigns. Listen to this. Here's the headline of the letter. Here's the headline of the story over on Deadline. I'll just give you a bunch of the details. So, Biden versus Trump live. Networks and cable newsers exhort candidates to publicly commit to debate. Is 2024 about to become the new 1972? Richard Nixon and George McGovern's battle for the White House 52 years ago was the last time that the Republican and the Democratic presidential candidates did not directly debate. Which is kind of crazy if they don't debate. First reported by the New York Times, the letter has gone unsent, due in part to ongoing efforts to get the likes of The Great Lady and other national publications to sign on too. Right now, President Joe Biden has refused to say whether or not that he plans to get on a stage with Donald Trump. Donald Trump, of course, is chomping at the bit to debate Biden. He's publicly challenged him to debate many, many times during this whole, this campaign. Let's see here. President Biden said last month, he said, it depends on his behavior. He's talking about whether or not he's willing to debate Trump. It depends on his behavior, the president said last month when he was asked directly whether or not he would meet Trump for some of these debates. Here's what the letter said. This is the leaked letter. So you guys are getting a sneak peek at it. Here's the leaked letter that they sent to both campaigns. Here's the letter. We, the undersigned national news organizations, urge the presumptive presidential nominees to publicly commit to participating in general election debates before November's election, states an as-yet-unsent letter that Deadline has seen from NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox News, News Nation, and CNN to the Trump and Biden campaigns. The letter continues, if there is one thing Americans can agree on during this polarized time, it is that the stakes of this election are exceptionally high. The correspondence also says, noting that in every election since 1976, tens of millions have tuned in to presidential debates. There's simply no substitute for the candidates debating with each other and before the American people, their visions for the future of the nation. I agree. I think it's super important. I would hope that they would do this. Last debate was, it was very entertaining. I don't know if you thought that it was very substantive, but it was very entertaining and a lot of people tuned in. The first debate between Trump and Biden was watched by over 73 million people back in 2020. We have a little clip of that. Again, basically it's just these guys yelling at each other, but this is how it sounded. 73 million people tuned in.
I'm not going to answer the question.
Why
because,
would you answer that
because
question?
The question is, the new Supreme Court justice, radical left. Will you shut
who is
up,
on,
man.
Listen, who is on your list, Joe?
This
Who's
is
on your
so
list?
Right.
Gentlemen,
this is,
I think
this
we've
is
ended
so
this.
He's
going to
pack the court.
We have
going to give a list.
We have ended this segment. We're going to move on to the second segment.
That was really a productive segment, wasn't it? Keep yapping, man.
The people understand, Joe.
They sure
47
do.
Years, you've done nothing. They understand.
Oh. All right.
So here's the thing. Here's the reason I think that Biden campaign might be kind of like drawing this out, trying to figure it out. One, last time, like the Deadline article talked about, when Nixon and McGovern did not debate, Nixon won. And so he didn't need it. He didn't have to debate. So maybe Biden's thinking, all right, since he's in the White House, then he's got the power of the pulpit with him, and he can just coast into a victory. That's possible. The other thing they might be thinking of is, I think it's pretty obvious to everybody who watches any press conference or any of the talk around Biden, he has lost a few steps, which is to be expected. The guy's almost 82 years old. And, it's been 4 years since that debate we just heard. Biden, obviously, he's lost a couple of steps, and people are nervous that if he gets onto a debate stage where you're not reading off of a teleprompter and you don't have notes, they can have notes in hand and things like that, but you're not reading off of a teleprompter and it's just you and the other guy going back and forth, is he going to be able to go toe-to-toe with Trump, who loves that stuff and is still able to get up there? And, I don't know if you care about the points that he's making. You probably don't, but he still is able to make points. And he's quite an attack dog on a stage. In fact, it worked against him last time, I think. I watched the debates last time with my wife, and we were watching the first debate, and she was, very interested to see how they would do against each other. And she said, I think Trump is being really mean to Biden. And I think a lot of people felt that way. So it was, I think it kind of worked in Biden's favor 4 years ago, but he could still, give and take. He could still have conversations. I don't know if he's still in that same exact state. A lot of the speaking that he does now is teleprompter related. Could he just have a back and forth? I don't know.
So the best way to get something done, if you hold near and dear to you that you like to be able to, anyway, we're going to get a lot done.
I think this idea of, him just talking extemporaneously is something that maybe makes, you know, the Democratic campaign nervous, possibly. On the Republican side, Trump, again, he has been challenging Biden to debates now for months, and there's nothing Trump wants more than to get onto a stage with Biden. I assume. I don't know, unless he's playing a trick or something, and he actually doesn't want to get on the stage with him. But Trump seems to thrive on the stage. I think he likes the spotlight. I think that's where he is happiest. That's where he wants to be. And, you know, Biden might have lost a few steps, and Trump is probably wanting to get on stage so he can do some name calling, which is what Trump's very, very good at. He's very good at calling names.
No, Christie's, he's eating right now. He can't be bothered. Sir, please do not call him a fat pig. That's very disrespectful. Don't call
ridiculous.
Him. See, I'm trying to be nice. Don't call him a fat pig. You can't do it. You can't do that. So now, because you're not allowed to do that, and therefore we're not going to do it, okay? We want to be very civil, right?
Listen to that. Yeah, he wants to be very civil. Very fun. Very civil, not civil. Very funny. All right, so we will see if they end up debating. Neither campaign has said whether or not it's going to happen. I think a lot of people would like to see it happen, and we will keep you up to date just as soon as it does. All right, one last story really fast before we get to our we got to take a quick break, and then when we come back, we're going to talk to that gas station owner, that Shell owner up in Shoreline, whose shop was broken into. But really fast, before we get to that, Jackie Chan. How's that for a segue? Jackie Chan is getting old, and now I feel old. Listen to this. One of my favorite actors, action stars of all time, Jackie Chan. I love this guy. I could not have been a bigger Jackie Chan fan. He hit at the perfect time in my young life. There was a movie in 1992 called Super Cop, where he does all sorts of amazing things. You guys know who Jackie Chan is. Rush Hour, him and Chris, what's his face? Chris Tucker. Fantastic. I do know they make like three of those movies. I love those movies. So great.
What is it good for? Absolutely not.
Say that again.
You are. Wah. Ooh. Yeah. What is it good for? Absolutely not.
You don't know nothing about no war.
Everybody knows war. Who? Yeah. What it is it good for? Absolutely nothing. Good God, you all.
Good God, you all. Okay, so why are we talking about Jackie Chan? He just turned 70 years old. Jackie Chan took to Instagram. He sent a message out to his fans thanking them for their birthday wishes, but also because many of them had started to notice that he's kind of starting to look like a little older, which happens to everybody. You can't stop it. It is inevitable. So here's a message he put out on Instagram for his followers. He said, "Even before today, many friends have been reminding me, Jackie, it's going to be your 70th birthday. Every time I hear this number, my heart would stop for a second. I'm 70 years old already. After recovering from the shock, the second thing that would come to mind is a saying that my big brother once said, being able to grow old is a fortunate thing, especially for us stunt people. We don't know how long we are able to grow old. Not so long ago, a lot of friends saw some recent photos of me on the internet, and they were all concerned about my health. I want to take this opportunity to let everyone know, don't worry, it's just a character appearance from my latest movie. The character requires me to have white hair, white beard, and look old. The point is, he looks very old, but thankfully it was just in makeup." I don't know. Or is that just an excuse? Who knows? But he is 70 years old. But we still love Jackie Chan. All right, we got a lot more coming up. We're going to talk to that shop owner next. Stick around. We're going to be right back here on Cairo Nights.
You're listening to Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
All right, welcome back to Cairo Nights. I have a guest on with me right now. He is the Shell station owner. His shop was broken into at the end of last week by those burglars. Police arrived on the scene. The burglars ran off, and the police did not pursue them because we have crazy rules here in our state. Joining me now is the Shell station owner. He asked not to be identified, but he's on with us now. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Hi, thank you. Thank you for having me on.
So this happened, this incident, as I understand it, this happened on Friday morning around 5 a.m., is that right?
That's correct. Friday in the morning, 5 a.m.
So how did you first become aware that people were breaking into your shop?
Well, when they started breaking the lock in front of my store, I got the alarm notification on my phone. And right away, when I see the alarm notification, I turned on my cameras right away and saw somebody breaking outside. he wasn't inside that time. He was cutting the lock in front of my door. And as soon as I saw him, I called 911 right away. And my wife woke up and she turned on her camera on her phone. And while I was talking to the 911 call, we were watching what he was doing, and I explained every single thing. You know, he's cutting the lock. He's trying to get inside the store. He's trying to break, you know, with the pry bar. He had like a 5-foot pry bar. He was trying to break the door with it.
You know, obviously it looked like this was, you know, he didn't just walk by your shop and decide to rob it. It looked like it was a planned out thing. Number one, he had the U-Haul. Basically what they figured out was if somebody drives by this gas station in the morning and they see somebody breaking in the door, that'd be a bad deal. So they get this big U-Haul truck, which kind of acts as a shield. You cannot see him breaking into the store from the road because it's totally blocked by this big giant U-Haul truck. He also brings, it looks like he has like a professional grade saw that he uses to cut
I was
the
surprised.
Door.
When he can get off his truck, he already had a saw in his hand. That's why we were watching again and again the video. So he already knew he had to cut the lock, which the lock is, you know, it's pretty good lock actually, but his saw was amazing. When I saw that, he cut the lock within less than a minute. So he was all prepared.
He was totally prepared. It was almost like, hey, I mean, I don't mean to make jokes about it, but it seemed like a low-level Ocean's 13 attempt, you know, like they had this all planned out. And then he gets that crowbar that you mentioned, which is like, you know, 5-6 feet long. He's using it for leverage, trying to get the door open. That doesn't even work. And so he finally connect. What does he do? He connects chains to his truck. Is that right?
He had a chain, you know, so that's why I was surprised. Another thing, he already has a chain with the hook in the front. And I hook up the chain to my front door and hook up the chain to other side in the U-Haul somewhere. And he just broke the door. Then he went inside after that and started grabbing all the product, the cigarette, paper product, and charger, whatever he could actually grab.
And as he's breaking in, again, you're watching all this live because you have the cameras on your phone. And
it's heartbreaking. It is heartbreaking for me and my wife. We had a robbery before, but this was heartbreaking. When he was doing everything, we saw everything live, and I was explaining every single thing to the 911 call, and I was telling them to tell the police that be there. You know, he's still there. You know, you guys have to be there, catch him. And when I see the end of the video, there were two guys. One was inside the U-Haul sitting on the driver's seat, and one was inside. When the guy saw the police car, actually, and he notified his partner that, okay, police is here, we gotta go. So he started like running a little faster. But police was right behind the U-Haul when
right
he
behind.
Jumped inside the...
Yeah,
right behind. We saw the police lights, you know, behind it, but police did not chase him.
When you're sitting at home, and you must be thinking to yourself, all right, well, I got on 911 immediately. These guys are going to get caught. The police are going to roll up any second. They're going to catch these guys.
Well, that was my expectation. We did not even waste a single second. But the frustrating part for me was, even though I done everything I could, you know, call 911, you know, told every single thing, identify who this guy looks like, and there's a U-Haul and every single thing. And the police was there. In the parking lot. He was in the parking lot and the police car was in the parking lot, but they did not catch him.
Were the police watching as they exited the building?
They did watch exiting the building because they have the way my store is, police come from the north side, and my store, they have to make kind of U-turn.
Okay.
So right on the light, when they were making a U-turn, they could see on the left-hand side there's a U-Haul, and the U-Haul is still there. So when the police car approached right in my parking lot, the U-Haul left that time.
In the video, you can see all the police lights, reflecting off the U-Haul. Obviously, the U-Haul guys are aware that the cops are there because they jump in the truck and race off as fast as they can. Are you still watching at home as the police do not pursue them?
I was watching that at home. And then my wife said, why are they not chasing him? Why are they not catching him? What's going on? That she was just keeps telling me. And I told the 911, catch that guy. He's right there, and police is right there. Why are they not chasing him? And then I went to the store after that. They were waiting for me, and I told them. I told a lot of things to police.
It must have been the same cops who arrived when the burglars were leaving. So those guys were there. What was their excuse for not pursuing them?
They said there's a law. We cannot chase him. The one thing he said, when he jumped into his car or truck, whatever it is, that's his house. So we cannot do anything.
That's his house. Those were the words he gave to you. That's his house.
That's his house. We are not supposed to go inside. That's what he said. We chase him. I don't know which cop chased him, but he said one of the cops chased him, which I don't know. and he gives the light to the U-Haul, and it's up to him if he wants to stop or not. That was his response to me. Why would he stop? You know, he did a crime, and he's not going to stop. You have to stop him forcefully and do something, scare him. And I even told him, okay, next time when you're going to try to stop me, if I'm over speeding 5 or 10 miles an hour, you try to stop me, I'm not going
to
stop.
If that's the pursuit law, it's up to the criminal to decide whether or not they're going to be pulled over and arrested. No criminal is ever going to pull over. And you're totally right. If somebody's getting a speeding ticket, why would you stop?
Yeah, that's what I told him. And I asked him, okay, let's see another scenario. If somebody hurt somebody or shot somebody, would you do the same thing? Then he said, oh, that's a different scenario. You know, in that case, we'll chase him and pursue,
Because then they're a danger to other people and it's a public.
Yeah, I believe they could chase him and they could easily catch him. You know, easily they can catch him.
Or block them. Like the U-Haul poured forward. Like, why, if they had cops there, why didn't they just park in front of it? If it is his house, park in front of his house so he can't move his house.
It's against the law if you run away from police. That's what we always read in the books, and we always know that if police ask you to stop, we have to stop. Otherwise, it's against the law.
You guys have been in Shoreline for a long time, haven't you?
More than 3 decades in Shoreline. All my kids were born in Shoreline. All they're going to school in Shoreline. We have 70 to 80 people living in Shoreline. All my brothers and cousins and my uncles, we have big family. And right now, we feel unsafe.
I'm so sorry to hear that. I think that's a feeling that a lot of people can share. We've definitely seen as the cities have gotten less safe. You're seeing a lot of people who are just saying, you know what, forget it. If you're going to leave this up, if this is going to be where criminals can run around free and they don't have to stop for police, why would law-abiding citizens stay here?
Yeah. I mean, criminal knows that. You know, they're going to do more and more crime. It's not going to. If they already know, police was there and he didn't even chase me, he didn't try to catch me. Let's do it again every night. They don't have to work.
I am sorry that this happened to you. I hope that, you're going to be able to be made whole. I know this is very expensive every time your shop gets broken into, and I know it's happened a couple of times to you. But I wish you the best for your family, and I hope that you guys are able to keep running the shop. And I hope that you can feel safe again in the town that you obviously love, and you have deep roots there.
I love Shoreline. Like I said, I know I've been here for, very long time, and my kids were born here, and we like to stay in Shoreline. But we need to have the same feeling we had before. We feel safe. We want to, when we go to the store, Fred Meyer, or Safeway, any store, when we go there, we want to feel safe that, nobody's going to also rob my wife or my daughter. Right now, I tell my daughter or wife, do not go to the store after 7 or 8 o'clock when it's dark. We don't know what's going to happen. So that's kind of feeling. We do not need this kind of feeling as a U.S. citizen. We don't want to feel like that this country is not safe. This is a very bad feeling.
Listen, as a husband and a father, I completely understand that feeling. You just want to make sure your family's safe and that you don't have to worry about them. Just simple things like going to the store. I hope things turn around in your neighborhood. I hope that these burglars are caught and they're arrested and they go away to jail for a long time. And I hope that your shop gets back in order. So thank you again so much for coming on and sharing your story with us.
Thank you, Jacob, very much.
All right, have a great night. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Man, I hope somebody in Shoreline is listening, and I hope the police are listening, and I hope that they start prioritizing people like this guy and not the criminals. And don't let these criminals get away. That's a bad deal. All right, we have a lot more coming up. Stick around. We're going to be right back here on Cairo Nights.
You're listening to Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Welcome back to Cairo Nights. All right, I was just so excited to tell you guys this story. It's one of my favorite stories I saw the day. It's ridiculous. It's, of course, a ridiculous story, but it's a fun one. So I hope you enjoy it. Last night on the show, we talked about this Gen Z young man, who took to TikTok, as Gen Z people tend to do, and he was just complaining and he was just yelling about how he just can't make a life that he wants, even though he's working for 3 times the federal minimum wage, which I believe is just over, federal minimum wage is like $7.25 an hour. So he's making somewhere around $21-22 an hour. And he was sad that he can't live on his own, which is, of course, anyone who's listening to the show who is, let's say, over 30 years old, you have also been in that, you have also had that experience where maybe you get right out of college or you get out of school or whatever the situation is, you're working really hard. It doesn't seem to add up to much because you're still working low paying jobs. That's kind of the way of it. And, you know, you get roommates, you make it work. And then eventually you get older and you figure out how to make more money. You gain skills, you become more valuable. People want to pay you more money as you get older because you have skills now. You don't need to be taught all the time. You can do things that other people can't do. That's how you make more money, not screaming about it on TikTok. I'll play you a quick clip real fast, and I'm going to play you this new Gen Z story. It's great. You're going to love it. All right, but here's the guy from TikTok. This is last night. Obviously, he's very upset.
Can somebody explain to me in crayon eating terms why I make over 3 times the federal minimum wage and I cannot afford to live?
I would also say really fast, like if you need things described to you in crayon eating terms, you might want to just, I don't know, like act a little older. That's like a child, like a really young child.
And I do not want to hear the pull yourself up from your bootstraps, work 90 hours a week. That's not the goal, guys. That should not be our standard.
You know what's funny about this clip? I was thinking about this yesterday. We had played it on the show already, and then I take my work home with me. I think about it. So I'm eating breakfast this morning, and I'm thinking about this and kind of laughing about it. I was kind of telling my wife about, oh, we played this really funny audio of this young guy, this young whippersnapper. You know, and I don't know how old this guy is. He looks about 10, 15 years younger than I am. But here's the thing. I'm sure, and this is like the horrible part about social media. He probably got a lot of positive feedback from this. I bet you there was a lot of people on TikTok his age who were saying, yes, you go, you speak for us, you go, yes, yes, yes. But I'll tell you what I probably don't think happened. I bet you he didn't get any job offers based off this. Like, he's complaining about not making enough money. I don't think there was any future employers watching this video, seeing him complain about having to work hard and work long hours and thought to themselves, you know what? This is the guy right here. This is the guy that I want to hire. And that's the dangers of social media. Like, he's getting positive responses from people his own age, maybe, or I don't know who's on the internet. Lots of weird people are on the internet. There could be some old person who thinks he's saying amazing things. But an employer out there who he might apply for a job with is going to see this video at some point. They're going to go, oh, man, if I'm going to hire someone, I have a choice between the guy who screams on TikTok about not wanting to work 70 hours a week, which I have done many times, and I was excited to do it because that means that you're making headway in your career. You work hard when you're young, so someday you don't have to work hard. And when you're young, you have all this like boundless energy. It's great. And like a lot of time on your hands. Plus, trust me, there's worse things you can do than spend your week working. I promise you. You could like just be out spending money that you don't have. That's a bad thing. If you're just like working a lot of hours, saving up money, money fixes a lot of problems. All right. So that's the Gen Z guy. Why are we talking about this now today? This is a story from yesterday. So why today? Well, Scrabble has decided that they want to aim their game at Gen Z. I guess Gen Zers don't like Scrabble because it's too competitive. Also, the words are really tough to spell. The BBC was talking about it.
This is exciting news. I love the game of Scrabble, invented in 1938, promoted in the 1940s, came to Britain in 1953. I've been playing it since the 1950s. I founded the National Scrabble Championships in 1971. We play the traditional game. But as you should know, change is inevitable. And in fact, change is the salt in the soup of life. And this good news, this exciting news, is there's going to be a new version of Scrabble. It doesn't deny the old version, but this is going to be a little bit easier. It is going to be more inclusive. The makers of Scrabble, Mattel, have done some research and found that younger people, Gen Z people, don't quite like the competitive nature of Scrabble that you and I thrive on. They want a game where you can simply enjoy words and language and being together and having fun creating words.
All right, two really quick thoughts. One, everything said with a English accent sounds better. Like this guy could say anything and I would go, yeah, well, he's got a point because he sounds really smart. But what he's saying, I disagree with, actually. I don't think they need to dumb the game down. I also think that, you know, if somebody doesn't like competitiveness, thank you. That's one less person that the rest of us who understand that you're going to have to compete in life have to compete against. So I guess that's a good thing. But dumbing down Scrabble, I don't know, whatever. Like, if they make money doing this, good for Mattel. But I don't think I would encourage my kids to play a dumbed down version of Scrabble. I'd want to raise the standards so they have to work a little bit harder, and then the vocabulary gets better. That's what I would want. All right. Thank you guys so much for listening. We sincerely appreciate it. But that's it for us tonight. We got to go. Night-night.